Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey. This is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. I'm Dan Hurst, and boy, today we've got something to talk about.
We do.
We're going to talk about the unseen signs.
Unseen signs,
of
he
a declining
says.
Or dying church. Now, you say, oh, well, that's pretty obvious, you know, when some of the things
we
talk about. But some of them will really kind of come up and get you.
Right. I mean, the seen signs are, hey, Dan, how you doing?
Yeah.
You doing well?
Yeah.
Nice to see you. Hey, but the seen signs are we're down in attendance, and we don't have as much money as we used to have. But there's a lot more behind the scenes that you don't see.
Well, yeah, or we just can't. We don't have an evangelism pastor,
right? Or we don't have a youth program.
Or, yeah, that there's so many things that we can blame it on. Yep. But these are the unseen things, the little things there that exist and are very real and cause some real problems in the church. Along with us today, we have our friend. What's his name?
Hang on just a minute. It's on my phone here.
It should be on a list somewhere.
It's somewhere. Who's the guest today? No, he was last week.
That was
Mark Halleck. Mark is Mark.
That's
how
me.
You doing,
thanks,
Mark?
Guys.
It's good to meet you. Glad
I feel
you're
loved.
Here.
Thank you.
No, Mark Halleck has been our guest for like 20 episodes, right, or more than that. And we're
thanks
grateful.
Thanks for not kicking me out yet.
We're
I appreciate
grateful
it.
To have you. Mark is from Inglewood, Colorado. Pastor at Calvary Church at Inglewood. Replanted it. Has a network of replant churches. Kyle is running the board for us. Kyle, glad to have you. Got his replant gear on. Looks so good. And we're all here today. We moved this podcast around all across North America. We have an RV, and we just travel everywhere, all of us together in a bus. But today we are at the Spurgeon Library at Midwestern. Thank you, Dr. Allen and Midwestern, for letting us use this place. And we are talking about the hidden, below the surface, can't really see them signs of a declining church that you need to be aware of, because these are problems for you. And number one, Dan, is what?
It's something that I've seen happen in almost every declining church that I've ever served at, and that is they just live too far away.
They
the
commute
people,
in. Yep.
Yeah, they just live farther and farther away.
Right.
And I wonder often, how did it get to that point? You know, what happened? Did they move away and just decided to keep coming back to the church? Or what happened? But anyway, the point is, the commute will get you.
Well, here's the deal. I always say all the time, what you want to do is go back. If your church has a pictorial church directory from 25 years ago, every church has a pictorial directory from 25 years. Not every church, but most do. Find your church directory. If it's not pictorial, just pull your records up. But do this. Get your church directory from 20, 25 years ago. Take a map of your community, and you can do it online now. You can do or you can do it old school, and take little dots or pins and just locate where all the members lived 20 or 25 years ago. Then do the very same thing today. And if there are noticeably fewer dots within 2 miles of your church, if everybody lives further out, that screams that's a problem.
Yeah.
And you're right, Dan. What's happened is, the people who used to live close in retired, died, moved away. Mm-hmm. And some of the people who live close in, the neighborhood changed and transitioned, and so they moved out, maybe to be closer to children or grandchildren or closer to work. Or they got a new home, and they weren't going to buy a new home in that neighborhood, so they moved out and bought a new home somewhere else. And so over time, what used to be a community church becomes a commuter church.
Mm-hmm.
And when the majority of your people drive in, and the problem with that is you say, wait a minute, Clifton, the church is not a building. You know, the first time I heard that was Thursday. I you know, I'm 63 years old.
Never heard it before.
I thought the church was a building. It has changed everything about my life.
Boy.
I'm so glad for the young seminary student on Twitter who pointed that out to me. I will forever be indebted to you, bro. Thank you for your ministry
You've
on Twitter.
You just ruined some kid right now.
Thank you for your ministry on Twitter to care for an older saint
an
like
aging
me.
Man.
I was so off base.
I
know the church isn't a building, but the church is the place we gather. And if you live 12 miles away, and hopefully you're getting to know your neighbors out there, and you're becoming friends with them, and you want to share the gospel with them, it's a little hard to ask him to drive 12 miles past 18 churches to get to yours. Mm-hmm. But if your church is in your neighborhood, right? You say, you know that church down there by the school we go by four times a day? That's where I attend. Mm-hmm. We have a Bible study there. We have something there. You're much more able to do that kind of evangelism and networking when you live in the neighborhood with your church. And one of the things we've lost in North America is the neighborhood
church.
That's
right.
And yeah. I think one of the most – I've been gone from Warner Road in Kansas City now for 7 or 10, almost 10 years, I guess. I left in 14. They're doing far better now. They've doubled in size since I left. That's my church growth method. I leave a church and it doubles. But
you need to write a book.
The last Sunday I was there, we maybe had 120, 130. We had 18 the first Sunday. What I was so thrilled about was that about half or more of those people, if they had to, could have walked to church.
Mm.
Now, I might have had to walk a couple of miles, but it was possible.
Yeah.
It's a neighborhood church, right? So is your church a neighborhood church or is it a commuter church? And, you know, you don't notice that because you may still have enough people and the tithes may still be coming. But, man, if they don't live in the neighborhood. And I'm working with the church now, and they said, well, yeah, we have some. And so we talked about it. They had maybe 50 people on Sunday. Maybe only 10 lived in the neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
You know, so
right.
And one of the dangerous parts about that is that if they're not connected to the community, it's going to be hard for them to continue to connect to the church.
That's exactly right.
So let's talk about not only the commute, but then there's the issue of worn-out ministries.
Mm-hmm.
Things that have just been – we've been doing this for 100 years,
right.
And we're still doing it.
We do it every year, whether we want to do it or not, whether we need to do it or not, yeah. Whether it works or not.
And, Mark, what you were saying before we started the podcast, what are some of the reasons why it's so hard for churches to let go sometimes of these ministries?
Well, unfortunately, sometimes members – remember Martha in the Bible? She didn't find her purpose in Jesus' teaching. She found her purpose in serving,
yeah.
Right? That's how she valued her. That's how she found her value and her self-worth at that point, at least on that day.
Yeah.
No, not on that day, because Jesus said, Martha, Martha, you're worried and troubled about many things. And everybody in the room went, yay! We get it. No. But we got people in our churches that rather than finding their joy and purpose and meaning in life in Christ, they find it in doing the work of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about it as though they're doing it for Christ. But you know they're not, because if you say, you know what, maybe we need to transition and not do this, they freak out and say, wait a minute, that's my ministry. That's what right. I
yep.
do.
Yep.
I was at a church as a transitional pastor where there was a tradition. This isn't a program, but it was a tradition. Well, it was a program, it was a music program. We had a volunteer choir director who wanted to have a special every Sunday. The problem with that was every Sunday someone sang, it was not special.
Which made it special.
It was far from special. And they would say, well, the Lord gave me this song today. And by the time they were done, I'd say, I think the Lord would like to have that one back. And so I'm working with the deacons. We're not going to do any special music for a few months. We're going to read scripture instead. It was awful.
Wow.
It was a battle royale
.
Because people found, quote, their ministry was to sing a special. Yeah. No, it wasn't.
You're taking their ministry.
It was like First Baptist Got Talent, right? Who's got the best?
Yeah.
My granddaughter's come from out of town. She would like to sing, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about, worn-out ministries, things where it's not glorifying God. It's not reaching people. It's not making – it all begins with how do we know our church is being successful in a revitalization? Are you a pattern of making disciples that make disciples – that result the community being noticeably better. Now, you're not going to get there overnight, but you have to begin to take away those things you're doing that don't accomplish that and add more fire and fuel to those things that do accomplish that.
That's right. That's right.
And so worn-out ministries. What have you
That's
seen
good.
Worn-out ministries in your church?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it. I mean, it's interesting. It's classic, I think, sometimes. We had a sweet lady who... You know, we didn't have any babies, but she—that was her ministry. You
was
know,
babies
in the church was holding babies.
Holding babies,
and she was never in worship, but she was always ready to hold the babies whenever the baby were to come. She was there, all faithful. And I can remember, you know, trying to gently but lovingly say, "Look, you know, if any babies show up,
right,
it'd be great to have you. But until that day comes,
right.
We'd love for you to be." In worship with us. And it's like she'd never been heard such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she was actually really hurt by that
mm-hmm.
to the point where she stopped coming to hold babies mm-hmm. that we didn't have, ironically. Mm-hmm. But I think I think of that because what you said, Mark, is so true. I think that can happen in any of our hearts, quite frankly.
Boy, isn't that true?
We can find our identity in what we do in a ministry position rather than in Christ. And so, you know, the leadership challenge then, of course, is how do you lovingly lead people from that place of identifying too strongly with their gift, whatever that ministry is, and help them fall more in love with Jesus and seeing that as the outflow of what they've been called to. And that's pastoral work. That's shepherding work that we need to do as we speak truth in love. And it takes time to do that.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the difference between ministries and volunteering.
Okay.
Because there's two different things that are going on. I have people that they fold the bulletin every Sunday.
Right.
Or every day. Right. That's their ministry.
Yeah.
It's not a ministry.
No.
and so they're doing their ministry.
It's a volunteer.
Yeah. Be careful.
Be careful. That's my ministry. Well, there is a crown in heaven for bulletin
folders.
Yeah, there it is. You get that one. So that's good. Kyle's over here shaking his head like we're in trouble. Dude, we were in trouble.
Well, we were
in trouble nine podcasts ago. Well, that ship has sailed.
Well, we just stepped on his toes with that last one. That's the problem.
I know. That's his ministry is folding bulletins. So that's all good.
There's another problem that's just kind of lurking around the corner in most churches that are going through a revitalization, and that is the declining ministry funds for children and students.
That's right. So if you want to see if your church is indeed at risk for closure or for decline, I agree. How far do people commute? Do you have a bunch of worn-out ministries that aren't making any difference?
Yep.
And when you look at your budget, look at what you spent on children and youth ministry a decade ago and what you spend on children and youth ministry today. And maybe factor in inflation if you need to do that, but probably you won't even have to do that. It'll probably still be less.
And why is that? I mean, the attitude is, well, they're not around anymore.
They're not. So, that's it. Right? You hit it. I mean, we can shut this thing down right now, this podcast. It's over.
Yep.
That's it. It's not that we're putting money in there to reach them.
Yep.
Well, there's no one there, so we don't fund it.
That's exactly right.
And it goes down every year, and you fund it less and less. Look, you can go to a church and say, let me see your budget. And if there's almost nothing for preschool, nothing for children, nothing for youth, and then you say, why are there no funds? And they say that, well, we don't have any. And you just want to go, your head wants to explode.
Yeah.
You go, well, that's sure a way to get them. I mean, that's right. To put any resources toward reaching them. Pretty smart to me.
Yeah,
let me write that down
and
put it in a book. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That'll work.
You know, this is part of visionary leadership. You've got to lead. If you're leading revitalization, you have to lead in a way that even if, like with kids, let's take kids as an example, the kids aren't there yet. But you have to lead in a way and help your people begin to function as though they are there. So, for instance, example, we had when we began to see just a handful of little kids coming, a few young families. One of the things that I said, well, hey, we've got to have a check-in, a children's check-in area that looks good. You know, again, we didn't have much money, but it looks good. We need to figure out a system for to put, you know, tags on the kiddos so the parents feel safe dropping their kids off and all these things. And I can remember a couple of the older folks going, are you nuts? Why in the world do we need that? And I said, listen, if we're going to reach families, that's the first thing they're looking at is, do you guys have your act together? Can I trust my child with you? And so I can remember we built a check-in team, even though we had like four kids. But what I can tell you is part of the growth that we began to see in families was when families came, they said, man, this church actually really cares about my kids.
Mm.
And they've taken the step to do it. So don't expect families to come back if you're not putting forth the effort, the resources, whatever it takes to say, we love kids, we value them, we value your family, and we want to do the best we can with what we have. I'm not saying you got to have some check-in system like the megachurch down the street, but you better have something that communicates we love you and we take this seriously.
Your church does something that I find, I mean, I know other churches do it, but...
And his church is Eaglewood, it's Calvary Church at Eaglewood, Colorado.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that.
By the way, I'm the only one of us here wearing headphones in this podcast. By the way, we don't have any production quality. We just,
I always see you with headphones on. I just figured that was the guy walks down the walks out on the
out
sidewalk with headphones
so,
on.
You guys, your voices sound so rich and so deep, and I sound like I'm in like a barrel.
Oh, no.
Does it sound okay?
You. No, it's Dan's voice is gorgeous. I mean, he's got a professional voice.
I know that.
Well, you sound great. No, you sound great.
Do I sound okay?
Oh, yeah. I got a weird voice.
I'm
really
insecure about that.
I've got a great surgeon that can help you out.
Can you? Okay. We can figure something out on that regard.
Hold on. Dan was saying something.
We have lost our audience now.
Yeah.
Something about a church. Our church does something.
Your church does something with kids. You put together a little packet so that when a family shows up, they've got a packet for the kids for the worship service.
Yeah.
Tell me about it, because that means you've allotted some funds along that
right.
line.
Right. It's simple things like that, Dan, that I think, you know, what does that communicate? One, for us, it communicates the value that we want children in the worship gathering. Our conviction is we don't want kids to be separate from the adults all the time. We want to help them see the joy and grow up as worshipers. So in those packets, we also recognize, man, this is a five-year-old kid. You know what I mean? And so how can we help them engage with what we're doing? So what's in that packet is not just some toys to just play around with, but even from a young age, we're trying to help them see, even if there's one or two points from the service from the sermon that they learned about or something that God did in their life in that day, we want to train them up. And we are called to train up the next generation of disciples. And so how are we helping families equip these kids? You've got to have a vision for it, man. If you don't have a vision for what you're going to do with the kids once they come, don't expect them to ever come. I mean, that's just the truth. And what are you going to do with
it? But it's interactive.
It is interactive. Right. It is interactive. I mean, I think, again, you've got to think about the language of children. I think this is the whole topic of children's ministry. How do kids learn? How do they feel engaged? And trying to get to their level and say, hey, how can they feel like they're part of this revitalization too? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And we need to do a whole podcast on when you don't have any kids in your church.
Yep.
What do you do?
Yep.
Well, one of the things you can do right now is clean out all the old junk in the preschool room.
Because
if you don't have any children in your church, I guarantee you your preschool room looks pretty bad.
And it probably smells weird.
You know, one time I was, I know everybody's thinking, how many stories does this old man have? Dude, I got a lot
of
stories.
He's just getting started.
So I was at a church not far from your house, buddy. You know what I'm talking about. And they had about 10 or 12 people left, and they were going to interview a young seminary student and his wife to be their pastor. So I met with them that Wednesday night in the church basement, and this seminary student had this sweet, you know, little girl. Her name was Annabelle. She was so sweet, and she's about 3 or 4 years old, about four actually. And so Annabelle and her mom were there, and so we're having this discussion, and one of the older ladies tells the pastor's wife, a potential pastor's wife, said, you know, we have a nursery down the hall if you want to take Annabelle down there and look at some toys. And okay. So Mom and Annabelle went down there, and Mom told me when they opened the nursery door, Annabelle said, is this a garage sale? Because she'd been going to garage sales with her mother, and the nursery room looked like a bunch of old toys and stuffed animals. And she wasn't making a joke.
Yeah.
Annabelle wasn't kidding. She's only four,
right? Yeah.
Dude, if your children's there, it looks like a garage sale. Clean it up. Look, take some money. Get rid of it. Here, go, call one of the larger churches in your association that has a children's ministry and say, would you mind, could we make an appointment with your children's director to come over to our church, walk through our children's area, tell us what we need to get rid of, what we need to keep, and give us a list of things we need to have. You say, we don't have any kids. I know, but now's the time to get your children's room ready.
No.
So if a visitor shows up, the parents are going to look at all this great stuff, all this clean stuff. Do it now.
And let me say this, too. And if you're listening to this and you're part of a healthy church, or maybe a larger church, that could come alongside and partner with a struggling church, and, man, redo their children's wing, man.
Yeah.
Redo their children. You've got money. You've got resources.
Right.
Don't tell me you don't.
Right.
You need to give that stuff away, and you could come and bless a congregation.
You know what?
And
if you've got a women's
ministry,
if you got a larger, healthier church and you got a good women's ministry, you know, go to a dying, declining church that needs some help in their children's work and come up with a list and have that women's ministry do a baby shower for the nursery.
That's a great
idea. For the
idea.
New nursery.
That's a great idea.
Because you get the nursery ready before the baby comes.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's really good.
All right. So where are we? I'm completely lost.
Well, let's go. We've talked about those little unseen things, the commute and the worn-out ministries and the declining ministry funds for children's and student ministries.
Oh, yeah, right.
But here's one that happens all the time, and that is – and we're kind of poking fun at this, but let's face it, it is. It's a pastoral parade.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean,
They come and they go.
And I keep looking for the clowns, you know, I wonder where the floats are, you know, it's, come on.
Yeah, when I went to Warnell Road in Kansas City, they had this big, long hallway you walked in when you came in the church. They'd remodeled the church, put the parking lot at the back, which wasn't there originally. So you came in the back, and they made this little, almost like a tunnel, like you were going, like you were in a gymnasium, and you're walking out to the stadium. Yeah. There's this long, you had to walk down this tunnel. Guys who people go to Warnell know what I'm talking about. You walk down this tunnel to get to the church. And so what they'd done on this probably 20-25 foot long hallway, they had pictures of every single pastor the church had with the date of their arrival and their departure. And of course, most of them were black and white. Most of them had been dead for a long time. All of them were white men, right?
Yeah.
And almost none of them were smiling. And so that's what, you know, their eyes would follow you as you would walk in. And you go, how many pastors has this church had? And of course, your eyes were always drawn to the guy who came in 1983 and left in 1983.
Yeah.
And you go, there's a backstory there. You know,
it's the Millard Fillmore of pastors, you know.
And so what this means is, though, when there's a parade of pastors, what happens is someone who's not called to be a pastor actually functions in that role. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the way, a lot of these things, like most of the things we do in this podcast, really is an influence from Tom Rainer and the 6 years I had with him on Revitalize and Replant back in those years, and he really helped me a lot. So a lot of this information comes from Dr. Rainer, and I'm grateful for that. But one of the things Dr. Rainer has discovered is that in a lot of churches, smaller churches that have a parade of pastors, they stay a year to 3 years, maybe four at the most, then they're gone. Then what? There's 6 or 8, 9 months between pastors? He said he's seen some churches where the church secretary really becomes the pastor.
Oh, wow.
Now, it doesn't mean she preaches. Yeah. Doesn't mean she gives spiritual leadership. But she's the
doing
one
doing everything else.
She's the one that knows everything for 20 years.
Yeah,
she's got all the corporate memory. Yep. And she's, you know, and so people who, and it's such, it can be, we always say, if you're not willing to stay 5 years, don't go.
Mm-hmm.
This is a generalization. But if you go to church and need a revitalization and you stay a couple of years and leave, chances are you're going to do more damage than good.
Mm.
Because whoever forced you to leave is going to be empowered because they forced you to leave.
Yeah.
Now, there are times that God wants to do something in your life and their life, and 18 months is all he wants you there. But those are the rare exceptions, not the rule.
Well, and I think, too, you know, I think we're titling this Unseen Signs of a Declining Church. The flip side of that is, I've seen churches that actually don't want pastors around a long time.
Okay.
Can almost begin to feel threatened, or, you know, this, especially if you've got folks who have power, it's a sick thing. But part of what you've got to do is help churches see you need a pastor who's going to be faithful and be here a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what's best, not only for you, but
right.
for this community.
Right.
So that means you can't be running guys out left and right either.
Right.
You know, so it goes both ways.
Well, that's true. Running them out really does keep the other people, the shadow government in
yeah,
place.
That's right,
so
exactly.
Yeah.
One more thing, and we got to wrap it up. We're almost out of time here. But one more thing about those unseen signs of declining or dying churches, and that is the facility itself.
Yes! Again, an old Methodist church consultant used to play a game when a church would call him. His name was Lyle Schaller. He'd say, would you come and do a church consult with us? The first thing Lyle Schaller would do, he'd walk in the sanctuary and he would play the game, what year is it? You know, and he, in his mind, he would look around and he goes, the last time you decorated this was, and he would think, he'd go, 1977? And they go, 1975. Close. So that's what I do. That's how I get my kicks now in church revitalization. I go to a church and I play this game. What year is it? Because you haven't touched this place in, is it, you know, you can tell by the light fixtures, the color schemes, right? Whether it's red or mauve or blue or green, you know, what year is it? And basically what that is saying is that we haven't touched anything in this place. And look, the building doesn't save anybody. The building doesn't change heart. I get all of that, but it's a tool. Here's the deal, and we'll end with this. We want to remove every barrier between a lost person and Jesus except the cross. Amen. And you get a lost person whose life is all, and you may want to share this with some of your building team, your trustees, if you've got them at your church, and say, you need to listen to what this guy's saying, and then I'll say it instead of you. You want to remove every barrier except the cross. You've got some people in your community who are dealing with drugs, with addiction, with divorce, with terminal cancer, with children who are reprobate and all kinds of problems in their life, and for whatever reason, they do decide that they're going to visit your church, your worship service, and somebody invites them. And they walk in, and the first thing they see is something that looks like it's 40 years out of date. And they're going to think, do these people really understand my life? Do they even know what I'm going through?
Yeah, that's right.
But if they walk into a place and it looks like someplace they just left, they're going to feel like, okay, there's something new happening here. I think maybe they can understand. It just removes one unnecessary barrier. And so that's what I'm saying. And also it helps people get used. The less you change things, the less they want to change them. So, I mean, the more you can change them up sometimes, just to change them up is good. But nonetheless, you're building. What year is it? And don't let your facility become a barrier.
That's good.
You've been listening to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, which is sponsored by the North American Mission Board, which we thank them very much for this. And we'd love for you to be an active part of our ministry here. If you would subscribe to it, that lets us know that you're listening, but it also helps us to market. The more people that we have subscribing, we're able to market this. And, of course, it's free. But it still requires some marketing and responsibilities along that line. So we want to be good stewards of that, and we would appreciate it if you would subscribe and leave your comments and questions and let us know what you think. And we hope that you'll join us again for the next episode of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.